Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today on our Capitol Report, you'll learn about a bill that would make major changes in Medicare. On Crime Beat, learn what an SDG&E worker has unearthed on the proposed site of a new high school in Alpine. We'll also have news about a chilling ballot proposition proposal that calls for the death of gay and lesbian people, and what Attorney General Kamala Harris is doing to try and halt it from getting on the ballot. If you think San Diego County seems a little more crowded lately, we'll tell you why. And then on Green Scene, learn why an activist group has mounted a campaign asking the state to stop the Nestle Corporation from bottling California water during the drought. We have some tragic news today about a 4-year-old drowning victim in Ramona, along with some pool safety tips for parents and swimming pool owners. Another drowning occurred at Lake Murray. Plus, we'll have details about a missing UCSD student on today's show. Hear why San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez has been honored with the Cesar Chavez Award just in time for Cesar Chavez Day. And then on Vines and Wines, we'll take you on a road trip to Ramona's Highland Valley for an interview with Alfredo Gaglione, owner of the Principi di Tricasa Winery in Ramona. He'll tell you about his family's regal heritage and about a rose-flavored wine once a favorite of Napoleon that's now being made right here in East County. On Tribal Beat, Leon Thompson will tell you why some Native Americans are taking offense at Pope Francis' announced plan to bestow sainthood on Father Junipero Serra, founder of California's missions. If you visited the San Diego Zoo's Safari Park recently, listen to our health report about a rabid bat found on the premises. We'll tell you who's thrown their hats in the ring to run for the 71st Assembly District seat, and then we'll tell you about some hikes on the county's top 10 trails. Learn where the county's newest medical marijuana dispensary has just opened. And then on Bookshelf, we'll replay Raina Menashe's interview with local author Lynn Morgan Spreen, the author of Dakota Blues. We'll have all these stories and more for you today on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. The House of Representatives has passed broad changes to our nation's Medicare system. The bill would raise premium costs for higher-income earners and extend a health insurance program for children, also setting a new formula for paying doctors. The bill passed by a 392-37 vote and now advances to the Senate. The measure was a compromise, with some Democrats opposed to provisions that continue restriction of federal funds for abortion services. Democrats also sought to extend funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program for 4 years instead of two. The measure had backing from both John Boehner, the Speaker, and Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. If no action is taken by the end of March, doctors could see a 21% cut in their fees for treating Medicare patients, though Medicare officials have said they could delay the cuts for up to 2 weeks. Under the bill, Medicare would pay doctors based on their performance, rewarding them for high-quality work, like keeping patients healthy, rather than the volume of services provided. The measure also boosts funding for community health care clinics. Higher-income Medicare patients will have to pay higher premiums for doctor visits and prescription drugs to help pay a portion of the bill's $141 billion cost, with the rest added to the nation's deficit.
This is Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report on East County Magazine. Homicide detectives are investigating the discovery of human remains in Alpine, the Sheriff's Department reports. According to Lieutenant John Marion, it appears the human remains have been there for quite some time. The Alpine Community Network reports that the grisly find was made on or near the Lazy A Ranch, site of the proposed Alpine High School on Alpine Boulevard. KNSD confirms that according to the County Assessor's Office, the land is owned by the Grossmont Union High School District. KNSD reports that the discovery of human remains was made by San Diego Gas and Electric Company surveyors assessing lines and poles as part of a fire-hardening project to replace wood poles with metal. Detectives from the Sheriff's Homicide Unit are investigating, and the medical examiner's office has been called in to help determine the identity and cause of death. If you know anything about the remains found in Alpine, you're asked to please call the homicide detail at 858-974-2321 or Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
A shocking California ballot initiative proposal calls for legalized murder of gay and lesbian people by, quote, bullets to the head or any other convenient measure. If the state does not act on the measure within a year, moreover, it would further empower the public to take the law into their own hands, effectively sanctioning murder, and clearly illegal. The proposed initiative authored by Huntington Beach attorney Matt McLaughlin has sparked outrage statewide and calls to revoke his law license. But the action also points up a dangerous loophole in California's initiative process that may prevent the state from blocking signature-gathering efforts for any ballot measure where the author has paid a $200 fee, even if the content advocates violence, is repugnant or unconstitutional. The so-called Sodomite Suppression Act has been submitted to State Attorney General Kamala Harris, who by law is required to draft the title and 100-word summary of any initiative submitted if the person's paid the fee. But in this case, Harris is seeking a court order to allow her to block the initiative. The initiative, if passed, would virtually be guaranteed to be found unconstitutional by the courts. Her action drew praise from Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins of San Diego, who is gay. But some legal experts predict the court may rule against Harris, in which case you may soon see signature gatherers, though the odds of the measure making the ballot, let alone passing, in a state where voters have already approved same-sex marriage seems remote. The legislature's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Caucus has written to the State Bar Association asking for an investigation into McLaughlin, and over 8,000 people so far have signed a petition to the State Bar Association's president asking that McLaughlin be disbarred from practicing law for advocating to, quote, legalize the murder of gays and lesbians. McLaughlin is clearly testing the limits of free speech in California. But Carol Dahman, a media consultant who started the petition, notes that McLaughlin is a lawyer, quote, and he's advocating for murder. The state bar has confirmed that it is investigating the complaints, but it's unclear whether it will have the power to take action. The proposed initiative would also ban gay and lesbians from holding public office or from receiving public benefits, and anyone belonging to any group advocating, quote, sodomistic propaganda, unquote, would similarly be ineligible for these things. Now, that's a broad definition that could potentially include members of any groups advocating for gay rights, even political parties, civil rights groups, or certain churches. Anybody transmitting sodomistic propaganda, as the initiative calls it, to a minor would be fined $1 million per offense and could be imprisoned for 10 years or even expelled from California for life. The measure echoes legislation enacted in some African countries, notably Uganda, which has imposed life in prison for homosexuality and once even proposed a death penalty for gay and lesbian persons. This is not McLaughlin's first involvement in the initiative process. He previously submitted an initiative proposal to make the Bible a textbook in public schools, a plan that would no doubt have violated the U.S. constitutional requirement for church and state separation, but that measure never qualified for the ballot. As for the likelihood of McLaughlin's current measure to authorize murder of gay and lesbians without even a trial, the San Francisco Chronicle concludes it seems inconceivable that such a proposal would collect the 365,000 valid signatures it would need to make the 2016 state ballot, or if it did, that the voters would approve it, or that any court this side of Uganda or Saudi Arabia would uphold it. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
If you think San Diego's having some growing pains, you may be right. The Census Bureau's numbers are in, and San Diego County is now the fifth most populous county in the nation. Over 3.3 million people now call San Diego County home, and we're growing fast, too. Between July 2013 and July 2014, we added the fourth most people of any other U.S. county, growing by 41,000 people. So where are those four counties with populations bigger than San Diego County? Los Angeles County is number one with over 10 million residents. Cook County, Illinois, which includes Chicago, has over 5 million inhabitants, followed by Harris County, Texas, home to Houston, with 4.4 million residents, and Maricopa County, Arizona, which includes Phoenix, with just over 4 million people living there. Two other California counties, Orange and Riverside, also made the list of the top 10 most populous counties nationwide. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report from East County Magazine. The Courage Campaign has mounted an effort asking the state to stop Nestle from bottling scarce California water during the drought and selling it out of state for profit. The activist group has an online petition asking the state to intervene. Nestle's operations are impacting public, private, and tribal water supplies. According to the Courage Campaign, Nestle has repeatedly ignored requests from local residents to halt its operations, even as water levels in local wells continue to shrink and residents experience poor water service and sputtering faucets. Activists have gone so far as to block all truck entrances of Nestle's Sacramento plant, carrying torches and pitchforks. Courage Campaign wants state officials to step in and preserve diminishing water supplies amid the fourth year of one of the worst droughts in history. Satellite imagery has led NASA to conclude California could run out of water in just 1 year, but in some areas, that's already occurring. California also produces much of the nation's food supply, yet many farms in the Central Valley are fallow since the federal government allocated zero water to them this year. And yet, while residents are facing water mandatory use restrictions statewide, Nestle is bottling water from at least a dozen natural springs in our state for its Arrowhead and Pure Life brands. One of the company's bottling plants is on the Murunga Native American Reservation. The company leases land from the tribe in one of our state's most drought-stricken areas that is exempt from oversight by local water agencies. Calvin Louie, the Cabazon Water District's manager, says he can see both sides in the issue involving Murunga. Arrowhead provides a lot of jobs, and that helps the economy, he says. On the other hand, Arrowhead has a reputation of going into small communities and taking advantage and basically pump them dry and good to the last drop. He adds that groundwater levels have dropped and he wants the tribe to turn over data about how much water is being pumped out. USA Today reported that an email from Nestle claimed the facility is operated to prevent harm to local groundwater. On its website, Nestle states, "We take our responsibility as a California company and water steward seriously. Our professionally trained geologists, hydrogeologists, and engineers follow a rigorous monitoring process to ensure that NWNA follows best practices for water management here and across all of our operations." Nestle is also pumping water out of the San Bernardino National Forest, our public land, without a valid permit, while critics also charge that the impact on flora and fauna is unknown, according to an investigation published in the Desert Sun newspaper. Steve Lowe, a retired Forest Service biologist, told the Desert Sun, "They're taking way too much water. That water is hugely important." He concludes, "Without water, you don't have wildlife, you don't have vegetation."
University of California San Diego campus police asked the public's help to locate Wilton Mock, a 22-year-old UCSD student who's been missing since last Sunday, March 22nd. His roommates reported that he left his off-campus residence near the UTC shopping center without his cell phone, wallet, or vehicle. Mock was last seen wearing a gray baseball-style shirt with black sleeves and black shorts, police said, adding that he is 5'5", 123 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. Mock's family and friends are concerned for his welfare. Police have received reports of Mock being sighted as recently as Wednesday evening in the Claremont area near the Claremont Town Square Shopping Center. UC San Diego police are currently assisting San Diego police in this investigation. If you have any information on Mock's whereabouts, please call UC San Diego Police immediately or call UC San Diego Detective Michael Williams at 858-534-9517. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
A 4-year-old boy drowned in a swimming pool on March 21st at a neighbor's home in Ramona. Lieutenant John Marion with the Sheriff's Homicide Unit calls the case a truly tragic accident and said no charges will be filed. The child somehow got through or over two fences that surrounded the pool on Swartz Canyon Road. The homeowner heard her dogs barking and discovered the child unconscious in the pool. She called 911 and followed instructions from the dispatcher on how to perform CPR. Paramedics tried to resuscitate the young victim, who was taken by air ambulance to Rady Children's Hospital, where despite all efforts to save him, he died. The tragedy is an important reminder to keep an eye on young children and for pool owners to follow safety procedures to reduce risks. Drowning is the number one cause of death in San Diego County among children ages 1 to 4 years old. About 70% of these drownings occur in home swimming pools and spas. And in the last 10 years, over 540 children in San Diego have been hospitalized after drowning accidents, and about 1 in 5 of them died. The San Diego chapter of the Independent Pool and Spa Service Association offers these tips to prevent drowning. Never leave a child alone in or near a pool, a spa, a beach, or a tub, not even for a second. If you have to leave momentarily, be sure to take the child with you. In most drownings, adults were nearby, and often the children were last seen playing in the house or outside away from the pool area, even napping inside. Enroll children over 3 in swimming lessons, but be aware that even kids who have had swimming instructions are still at risk. Don't rely on inner tubes, inflatable toys, or other items to keep your child safe either. If a child is missing, immediately look first in the pool or spa. A drowning child cannot cry out for help, and death can occur in minutes. If you own a pool or spa, enclose them with a fence or wall, and always keep your pool and spa area locked. Be sure the gate is spring-locked, self-closing, and has a self-locking mechanism. The inside latch should also be above the reach of young children. It's a good idea to also add a pool cover and alarms on doors and windows that can lead to a pool, but they're not foolproof and should not be considered a substitute for supervision. If you have a pool cover, remove it completely when using the pool. A small child can get trapped underneath it and not be visible to adults. Never allow children to ride tricycles or other wheeled toys near water. It just takes a second for them to fall in and drown. Insist that nobody swim alone at your home and always have a spot nearby, even for adults. Don't let children scream and play while they're in a pool because a real emergency might then go unnoticed. Teach children how to get out of the pool or spa quickly. Keep items handy that can be thrown in or used to reach a swimmer in distress. Prohibit swimming after eating meals. Don't allow swimming during thunderstorms, even if the storm seems far away, because lightning is attracted to water and could travel for miles. Teach your children never to dive into water if you don't know the depth. Many cases of paralysis can be prevented this way. When in doubt, stay out. Learn CPR and teach your children, too. Keep a portable phone or cell phone fully charged at the pool or spa at all times, and teach your kids how to dial 911, too. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. A 4-year-old boy drowned in a swimming pool on March 21st at a neighbor's home in Ramona. Lieutenant John Marion with the Sheriff's Homicide Unit calls the case a truly tragic accident and said no charges will be filed. The child somehow got through or over 2 fences that surrounded the pool on Swartz Canyon Road. The homeowner heard her dogs barking and discovered the child unconscious in the pool. She called 911 and followed instructions from the dispatcher on how to perform CPR. Paramedics tried to resuscitate the young victim, who was taken by air ambulance to Rady Children's Hospital, where despite all efforts to save him, he died. The tragedy is an important reminder to keep an eye on young children and for pool owners to follow safety procedures to reduce risks. Drowning is the number one cause of death in San Diego County among children ages 1 to 4 years old. About 70% of these drownings occur in home swimming pools and spas. And in the last 10 years, over 540 children in San Diego have been hospitalized after drowning accidents, and about 1 in 5 of them died. The San Diego chapter of the Independent Pool and Spa Service Association offers these tips to prevent drowning. Never leave a child alone in or near a pool, a spa, a beach, or a tub, not even for a second. If you have to leave momentarily, be sure to take the child with you. In most drownings, adults were nearby, and often the children were last seen playing in the house or outside away from the pool area, even napping inside. Enroll children over 3 in swimming lessons, but be aware that even kids who have had swimming instructions are still at risk. Don't rely on inner tubes, inflatable toys, or other items to keep your child safe either. If a child is missing, immediately look first in the pool or spa. A drowning child cannot cry out for help, and death can occur in minutes. If you own a pool or spa, enclose them with a fence or wall, and always keep your pool and spa area locked. Be sure the gate is spring-locked, self-closing, and has a self-locking mechanism. The inside latch should also be above the reach of young children. It's a good idea to also add a pool cover and alarms on doors and windows that can lead to a pool, but they're not foolproof and should not be considered a substitute for supervision. If you have a pool cover, remove it completely when using the pool. A small child can get trapped underneath it and not be visible to adults. Never allow children to ride tricycles or other wheeled toys near water. It just takes a second for them to fall in and drown. Insist that nobody swim alone at your home and always have a spot nearby, even for adults. Don't let children scream and play while they're in a pool because a real emergency might then go unnoticed. Teach children how to get out of the pool or spa quickly. Keep items handy that can be thrown in or used to reach a swimmer in distress. Prohibit swimming after eating meals. Don't allow swimming during thunderstorms, even if the storm seems far away, because lightning is attracted to water and could travel for miles. Teach your children never to dive into water if you don't know the depth. Many cases of paralysis can be prevented this way. When in doubt, stay out. Learn CPR and teach your children, too. Keep a portable phone or cell phone fully charged at the pool or spa at all times, and teach your kids how to dial 911, too. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Tuesday is Cesar Chavez Day, and Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, who represents San Diego's 80th Assembly District, has received the Cesar Chavez Foundation Legacy Award for her career supporting immigrants and working families. Gonzalez says she is humbled by the honor, but adds, "Any success I may have is meaningless if our community does not share in the fruits of that success. In a state where farm workers are provided fewer protections to water and shade than farm animals, we still have a long way to go. I am committed to continuing the work of representing every Californian, no matter where they work or their immigration status." Additional honorees include acclaimed actor and Grammy Award winner Kris Kristofferson, the band Los Lobos, Los Angeles City Council's President Herb Wesson, the president and co-founder of Alianza Nacional de Campesinas, Miley Trevino Saceda, Walt Disney Studios for its film McFarland USA, and two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Jim Plunkett. The daughter of an immigrant farm worker and a nurse, Gonzalez was the first woman and first person of color to be elected CEO and Secretary Treasurer for the San Diego and Imperial Counties Labor Council, AFL-CIO, since the organization's inception in 1891. A single mom, she was elected to the Assembly in May 2013 and chairs the Assembly Select Committee on Women in the Workplace. In her first 3 months in office, she authored two bills that empowered California's immigrant communities by providing them with safeguards against immigration fraud and allowing qualified dreamers who pass the state bar exam to practice law. Then in 2014, she authored historic legislation to allow 6.5 million Californians the ability to earn paid sick leave. When that measure was signed by Governor Brown, California became the first state in the nation to guarantee earned sick days for every single private sector worker. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Maness of the Maness Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new EVA wine growing district.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I am guest hosting the Vines and Wines segment on our show, and we are on location in Ramona's Highland Valley, the heart of wine country up here. And our very special guest today is Alfredo Gallone with the Principe de Tricase Winery. Alfredo, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So I understand that your family has a very illustrious lineage in Italy with its roots in Greece. Tell us about that.
My family moved from Greece in the 1500s to southern Italy. And because at that time southern Italy was attacked on the coastline from the African tribes, my ancestor organized protection for the coastline. And the king of Naples, heard about this valor and named him as Principe di Tricase. And so the lineage started with him.
So he was recognized for his heroism by being named the prince of all the lands that he was protecting. That is amazing. Now, I also understand that your winery here specializes in a grape called Alianico, which originated in Greece but is no longer grown there. It's grown in Italy, and now you're bringing it here to Southern California in Ramona. Tell us what is so special about the Alianico grape and wine.
Well, we produce here three grapes, Alianico, Aleatico, and Nebbiolo. And we're just starting with some Petit Syrah, but mostly are Italian grapes that are very old, ancient grapes. The Aglianico was used by the Romans to go around and to plant new grapes everywhere because it was very hardy, and the wine mostly was capable of traveling versus other wines that are more delicate.
I'm told that the Aleatico was the favored wine of a very famous person in history.
The Aleatico was the wine that Napoleon used to drink when he was a prisoner at the island of Elba. And if you go on Wikipedia, you'll find out more about him loving the wines and being happy to drink that kind of a specialty wine, which is available here now in Ramona and is made the same ancient way it was made then today.
Amazing. It's really one of the most unusual wines I've ever tasted. Can you tell us about that?
The Aleatico has the rose flavor and smell, and is just coming out of the glass when you pour it, without any addition whatsoever to the grape itself or to the wine. It's just a natural smell, which is really, really amazing.
You also have a wine called Romantico that's a dessert wine. Can you give us some details?
Yes, the Romantico is the same Aleatico grapes dried out in the sun after harvest and then squeezed. It's a very particular wine with a strong aroma, beautiful for dessert, a little high in alcohol, but it will really give you a romantic evening.
Well, thank you for sharing that information.
We also, from the skin of the Aglianico, Aunt B Botanicals makes a cream that is used for botanical clay mask or for preserving, supposedly preserving from aging.
Amazing. Okay. Now, I see that a lot of your wine bottles here have medals hanging around them. Tell us about some of the awards that you've won.
In the last 2 or 3 years, after my wine started, to my taste, was kind of good. I didn't know if it was just me that I liked it or if it was a good wine. So I sent for competitions all over the country, and I won like 12 medals in 2 years.
Very good, including some impressive ones, Finger Lakes International Competition in New York, to name one of them. I understand that you're only making these right now in very small batches, so how do people get these wines?
Our production is very limited, and we make around 6,000 bottles of wine every year. So we will be able to sell it through membership and through club membership only to maybe 200 or 300 people that will enroll to our club membership, and that's how we distribute our wine.
Okay, so that's through pineandwine.com.
Yes, or they can call me on the phone numbers that are listed on the web. And to you listeners, if you mention that you heard about this interview and you come to us, I'll make sure you'll be very happy and surprised with some special treatment. Thank you.
Well, that's very kind. Now, you also grow Christmas trees. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Well, when I bought the property here in Ramona in 2007, it was a Christmas tree farm. And I was here when the last year the former owner was selling the last of his trees. So everybody that came begged me to keep the Christmas tree farm open. And so we have pine with the Christmas tree and wine with the grapes. And we have pineandwine.com and we still are open to sell the Christmas tree at Christmas time.
Well, very good. And if people want to come and do tastings, I understand that it's by appointment only right now, is that correct?
Yes, we are open by appointment. You can go on our website and pineandwine.com, and my number is there. You can call me, and anytime I'm up here, I'll be happy to open up for you and show you my winery, taste my wine from barrel or from bottles.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much for coming.
Cheers.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. Pope Francis, on a flight to Rome, declared to reporters, "In September, God willing, I will canonize Junipero Serra in the United States." In other words, the Pope intends to make Junipero Serra a Roman Catholic saint. When Father Junipero Serra, with a battalion of Spanish soldiers, built a mission near Kumeyaay Bay in 1769, there were around 300,000 indigenous people living in California. Serra was the founder of 9 Roman Catholic missions from San Diego's Mission de Alcala to San Francisco. Serra's accomplishment is hailed as the origin story for California, filled with grand deeds. It is said that Serra performed a miracle by curing a nun in St. Louis of lupus. While beatification requires a miracle, the next step, canonization or sainthood, requires a second miracle. But Pope Francis, a fellow Jesuit, made an exception, calling Serra a holy man and a great evangelizer. Serra baptized nearly 6,000 Indians. It was for Serra's great evangelizing that Pope Francis points to as qualifying him as a saint. However, Junipero Serra is no saint to indigenous people. He viewed the indigenous tribes as heathens who desperately needed the gospel, but the indigenous people of California paid a high price for their conversion. The missions were built with Indian slave labor. Their ancient food supplies dwindled. Smallpox, measles, plagues, and other diseases spiked as they came together in these tight concentrations, and their numbers plummeted. According to author and historian Robert Jackson, given a native population collapse in the Spanish Catholic missions of Alta California, any Indian person consigned to or born in a mission had been pretty much given a death sentence. The massive destruction of the original nations and peoples of California is the reason why there ought to be a mourning rather than a celebration associated with the ship San Salvador and the Spanish Catholic mission system. Stephen Newcomb, co-founder of the Indigenous Law Institute, wrote, "Pope Francis and the Vatican are going to celebrate the deadly and unsaintly Spanish Catholic mission system by bestowing sainthood on Junipero Serra. What does that say about a religion and a society when it pretends that a tradition of dehumanization and brutal domination is a tradition of virtue and saintliness? The same institute that brought us the Crusades, a Borgia Pope, and the Inquisition is now going to sanctify Serra's legacy." Father Manuel Tony Diaz, the administrator of the San Gabriel mission founded in 1771 by Serra, said his joyous reaction to the announcement of the Padre's canonization was tempered by the knowledge that some of his own parishioners look upon Serra as a reminder of a lost or frayed tribal history. at the time when Juan Cabrillo sailed into Kumeyaay Bay, the Kumeyaay Nation had a complex way of living off the land, migrating from the coast to the foothills every year to follow the food supply, cultivating and harvesting staples, and weaving elaborate baskets to store and carry their goods. They manipulated the chaparral with fire to produce more food to pick and animals to hunt. Cattle ranching and sheep grazing by the Europeans led to the collapse of the traditional Kumeyaay economy, aided by a later law banning the Indians from burning the landscape. Those who converted were forced to drop their old ways and eat, dress, and act like the Europeans. Public Broadcasting produced an alarming documentary on Serra and the mission system. They had this to say. Despite the frequent conflicts between military and religious authority for Alta California's Indians, the missions and their Franciscan administrators were part and parcel of an enormous destructive colonization process. The Spanish, largely through disease, were responsible for a population decline from about 300,000 Indians in 1769 to about 200,000 by 1821. The strenuous work regime and high population density within the missions themselves also caused high death rates among the mission Indians. By law, all baptized Indians subjected themselves completely to the authority of the Franciscans. They could be whipped, shackled, or imprisoned for disobedience and hunted down if they fled the mission grounds. Indian recruits, who were often forced to convert nearly at gunpoint, could be expected to survive mission life for only about 10 years. As one friar noted, the Indians live well free, but as soon as we reduce them to a Christian and community life, they fatten, sicken, and die. In Junipero Serra's defense, Gregory Orfalea, who wrote a biography of Serra, said, "When the Kumeyaay sacked the San Diego mission in 1775, killing three Spaniards, the viceroy captured about a dozen Indians and called for their execution. But Serra called for the prisoners' release and pleaded their case to the viceroy in a letter in which he wrote, 'As to the killers, let them live so that he can be saved, for that is the purpose of our coming here and its sole justification.'" In doing so, Orfalea says Serra modeled his life on the gospel of love, not a desire for land or gold. And in this way, he was different from Columbus, who enslaved and tortured Caribbean natives in his quest for precious metals. Orfalea said Pope Francis' decision was no surprise. A Jesuit who took the name after the saint and founder of the Franciscan order, Francis does not believe in Catholicism confined to the ivory tower. Serra was a kindred spirit who abandoned a high-profile academic post to take on the dangerous, austere life of a missionary. Ruben Mendoza, coordinator of California Mission Archaeology at Cal State Monterey Bay, says the canonization is long overdue. "I've always felt the canonization process was stymied through misinformation and politicalization and laying blame and onus on one individual who was actually in constant conflict with the governors and military commanders in New Spain over how they were treating the Indians." He and others said Serra fought efforts to enslave the Indians, and whippings were not limited to natives, but a common method of discipline in the Spanish Empire. Steve Newcomb concludes, "The fact remains that the Juan Cabrillo ship San Salvador was built with the spent lives of Indians and crushing Indian slave labor. The 21 Spanish Catholic missions were also built with Indian slave labor and resulted in a genocidal-level population collapse among the native nations of the geographical area known as California." Ron Andrade, executive director of the Los Angeles City and County Native American Indian Commission, compared Junipero Serra to the Spanish conquistadors who subjugated South America. Andre, a Luiseno Indian from the La Jolla band of Kumeyaay, said Serra decimated the Indian population. "Everywhere they put a mission, the majority of Indians are gone," Andre said, "and Serra knew what they were doing. They were taking the land, taking the crops. He knew the soldiers were raping women, and he turned his head." Many tribes, including the Luiseno, the Juaneño, and the Gabrielino, survived the mission era through partial integration with each other and Spanish culture, but others fled inland or lost their culture completely, Andrade said. The choice of Sarah for canonization is especially unfortunate given the Catholic Church has been making its first attempts at reconciliation with some of California's indigenous people who experienced devastating losses due to the colonial system Sarah ushered in. On December 22, 2012, Bishop Richard Garcia of the Monterey Diocese offered the Ama Mutsin tribal band apologies from the church. He invited people to a massive reconciliation between the church and tribal members at Mission San Juan Bautista. In other former missions, tribal communities have sought reconciliation for the trauma their ancestors experienced, wounds that often remain open today. The selection of Junipero Serra as a saint seems antithetical to the current emphasis on and need for reconciliation.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Leon Thompson with a health alert from the County of San Diego. The county's Health and Human Services Agency reports that a bat found at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park has tested positive for rabies. The bat was found dead on March 25th on a public walkway. The bat was not one of the park's collection animals, but instead was a native species. County health officials are interested to know if anyone who was in the park on March 25th directly handled the rabid bat. If you or someone in your family or group has contact with the bat, you're urged to contact the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency as soon as possible at 619-692-8499. Wilma Wooten, County Public Health Officer, says human rabies is usually fatal without prompt post-exposure vaccine and treatment. There has been no reported human or animal contact with this bat, but it was found in an area where many park visitors pass by. We want to make sure that no one had contact with it. Rabies transmission can occur from a bat bite, but even if without a bite, saliva on the bat's fur or mouth could expose a person to rabies if it comes into contact with a cut or abrasion or with the eyes, nose, or mouth. Wooten advises people should always stay away from bats and other wild animals to prevent the possible exposure to rabies. If you see a bat, dead or alive, don't touch it. Rabies in humans can be prevented by avoiding contact with wild, stray, and unknown domestic animals, ensuring pets are up to date on rabies vaccinations, and receiving prompt medical advice following animal bites and other significant exposures to potentially rabid animals. Rabies is not uncommon in wild bats in San Diego County. If direct contact with a bat does occur, wash the affected area thoroughly with soap and water and always get medical advice immediately.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the race for the open 71st Assembly District being vacated by Brian Jones due to term limits. Randy Vopel, Santee's mayor for the last 15 years, has thrown his hat in the ring to run for the seat. Vopel will be running against Michael Harrison, who works for Congressman Duncan Hunter and previously served as an aide to Hunter's father, the former congressman. So far, no Democratic candidate has emerged in this heavily conservative district, which in the last election saw only two Republicans on the ticket for the first time. Vopel says he is running on his record as a staunch conservative, so conservative that in 2010, he actually left the Republican Party and registered as an independent. He told the UT San Diego that he was fed up with Republican Party ideals and identified more with the Tea Party ideals of lower taxes and smaller government. One of East County's most flamboyant political leaders, Vopel is also a staunch climate change denier, who once sent organizers of a climate change event an email urging them to enjoy their Wreck the Economy party, as he called it. An advocate of free market conservative policies, he points to his accomplishments as mayor. Those include building one of the biggest reserve funds per capita of any city in the region, keeping Santee fiscally sound even when its neighboring cities struggled. Though city spending was cut 16% in the lean years and no sales tax hikes were imposed as they were in other cities, Santee residents still benefited from addition of a new teen center, ball fields, concert and recreational activities. Vopel and the council implemented pro-business policies, attracting major national restaurant chains and retailers, as well as upscale residential and office development. Michael Harrison, a Ramona resident originally from El Centro, studied government at Johns Hopkins University, according to his Facebook page. He has gained support of congressional members Daryl Issa, Duncan Hunter, and his father, as well as former Congressman Brian Bilbray.
Harrison, too, says he will support conservative ideals and principles in government. He blames high taxes, overreaching regulations, and what he calls an unfavorable business climate for the state's economic problems. Harrison also says he wants to strengthen the education system, improve California's infrastructure, protect Prop 13, and promote California's business opportunities. Sources in the Democratic Party inform East County Magazine that they are still actively looking to recruit a candidate to run for this office.
Spring is here, and it's a great time to put down the electronic devices and enjoy the natural environment or participate in a sport that you can do at your own pace, such as hiking. The San Diego County Parks and Recreation Department has more than 300 miles of trails throughout the county. The county has picked out 10 trails for a top 10 list for you to check out, with a wide variety of lengths, skill levels, and views. So whether you're taking your first steps or looking for new hiking challenges, there's something for everyone to enjoy. You can find the county's top 10 hikes at countynewscenter.com. There are hikes listed countywide, including these three in East County. The Ramona Grasslands Preserve, which has an easy stroll along a 4-mile loop trail. The Santa Isabel Preserves, which offer over 18 miles of moderate to difficult hiking trails, including two loop trails through areas surrounded by oak woodlands, native grasslands, and fields of wildflowers. El Capitan Preserve in Lakeside, which offers a strenuous hike for experienced hikers only along a rugged granite ridgeline with stunning views of ocean and mountains. You can also join the El Cajon Mountain Extreme Hiking Challenge. Meet the ranger at the El Capitan Preserve parking lot on Saturdays at 8 a.m. for this 7-hour, 12-mile round-trip hike. Hiking has several health benefits. According to the American Hiking Society, hiking can help you potentially lose weight, reduce heart disease, decrease hypertension, and reduce stress and anxiety. Before setting out on a hike, make sure you take into account the difficulty of a trail and your own physical fitness level. Bring plenty of water, dress properly, stay on marked trails, and make sure you let someone know where you are hiking. The Parks and Recreation Department also has several guided hikes throughout the year in various parks. You can find out more online. Also, check out other helpful resources in the County News Center's Trail Guide resources, including tips for staying safe in the heat and precautions to take while enjoying our local trails. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report on East County Magazine. The city of San Diego's first legal marijuana dispensary is now open for business. A green alternative is located in an Otay Mesa strip mall near the Brownfield Airport. The area is zoned commercial, and the nearest residence is a prison nearly 2 miles away. The owner is David Blair, a business teacher at San Diego State University. The dispensary obtained a permit after the Planning Commission rejected an appeal from a drug abuse prevention advocate. The commission also rejected appeals that have sought to stop dispensaries opening in Kearny Mesa, the Midway District, and San Ysidro, City News Service reports. City law allows for up to 4 medical marijuana dispensaries in each council district. While both the county and city of San Diego have licensed legal medical marijuana dispensaries, albeit years after California voters approved medical marijuana, voters and councils in East County cities have thus far rejected all proposals to make medical marijuana accessible within their city limits.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Lynn Morgan Spreen, author of Dakota Blues, which won the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. In the last couple of years, my guest has transitioned from journalist, columnist, and human resources executive to full-time writer and blogger. Welcome, Lynn. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Lynn, although Dakota Blues is a work of fiction, the story is based on the lives of your ancestors, German immigrants who settled in North Dakota in the late 1800s. Can you tell us a little about the history of that, of your family, and what inspired you to turn it into fiction?
I went there recently, and I was just stunned by the stories that I was hearing from my extended family, many of whom I was meeting for the first time. They were telling me stories of how the immigrants, how difficult they had it. And I mean, they would come over on ships, and then trains, and then, you know, wagons, and there was nothing there for them to build houses with. No trees. They didn't realize this. So they had to build like dugouts in the ground. And they lived essentially in holes in the ground for the first couple of summers.
I mean, winters.
Yes. They're the first couple of winters. And then as their fortunes improved, they would build houses out of like clumps of sod called soddies, then stone, then finally lumber. And the things they went through were just so shocking. I wanted to convey those stories through my fiction. Although I'm not a historian, I didn't want those stories to be lost.
Right.
So by writing what my preferred fiction is, a work of, you know, telling the story of a woman in midlife who's having to start all over again, she finds her resiliency by reaching down into her history and pulling up the strength of those ancestors. So it's kind of a cool way to be able to tell the story of my family
right.
in this way.
So for you, the history really inspired the story. It wasn't that you had always planned on writing this kind of story even a book.
Exactly true. Exactly true. The stories are just so stunning. In fact, if I could just say one thing, the Banat Germans, that's my ancestry, they had a saying, to the first generation is death, to the second is hardship, to the third is success.
Wow.
They took the long view of investing for their family's good.
Wow. Very poignant.
Yeah, I know.
Well, your book, Dakota Blues, was recognized by the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. As I understand it, this is a contest for independent authors and publishers. Would you like to say something about independent publishing? What inspires you to make it on your own instead of going the traditional route?
You know, I think that you would be making it on your own even if you went the traditional route these days.
Right.
I don't think there's any such thing the way that things are changing.
Yes.
And so I figured if I'm going to have to do all the marketing, you know, I have the kind of little red hen theory of book publishing.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to have to, you know, grow the wheat and mill the wheat and turn it into flour and make the bread, I'm probably going to enjoy the benefits myself. But more than that, I think even traditionally published authors have to do all of their own marketing these days.
Right.
I enjoy doing the marketing, but more than that, I enjoy the control, being able to create the book cover myself or decide what the format's going to be. And also, there's a greater profit margin, frankly, if you're selling your own books rather than having to support a Madison Avenue operation. So I think the idea is also that you can publish more quickly. You can publish a book in 6 months if you can get it written, whereas with the traditional model, it takes years and years and years to first find an agent and then to get a publishing house, of which there are fewer. So if you like control like I do, kind of a control freak, and also the speed and the revenues, I think those are my answers.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm doing it. I would encourage others to also.
Well, it sounds like the changes that are going on in society are aligned with what you enjoy.
Yes.
I know you've said that you want people to read about midlife characters, and you have a midlife character in your book. You want them to know about the midlife experience and triumphing over age. What kind of feedback have you received from readers about having an older heroine rather than a younger one?
Oh, this is the most gratifying thing. You know, there are over 70 million people over 50 in this country right now.
Really?
And it's getting, you know, there are more and more every day. Judging from both comments to my blog and also the reviews that I'm getting for my book, people are saying, this is so great. I'm tired of reading about young people. I want to know what's going to happen in the second half.
Right.
And so the idea of a coming-of-age story at midlife is sort of gaining traction. And that's what people are telling me, that they're excited to read about an older person now and what challenges she has.
So what kinds of books do you foresee in the second half of your life?
For me to write, or the things that I think other people will write?
For you to write.
Oh, all I want to write about is this. The same thing. I love the challenges that we face as people in the second half. I think there is so much internal growth. We have so many gifts. There's so much power.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in our culture, we really don't celebrate that.
Right.
That's what I rejoice in. I get so much, I enjoy that so much, telling people, you just don't even know what your strengths are. Let's talk about it. And that's what I write about in story form, in fiction.
That's an inspiring message.
Thanks.
Well, that brings us to your blog, also referred to as Midlife Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your blog and how you see blog writing in the modern writer's life.
My blog, Any Shiny Thing, I called it that because, some birds, you know, they get distracted easily by shiny things. And right. I didn't want to be limited to one particular topic. But it is about midlife. And I have a controversial recommendation for authors as far as blogging. Right now, everybody's told, all debut authors, all aspiring authors are told, oh, you must have a blog, you must have a blog. Blogs are wonderful. I think you absolutely must have a website. I think as often as you can, you should tinker with that website so as to draw traffic to the website for the purpose of marketing your book. You need to know why you are blogging. If you're blogging because you want to express yourself artistically and you want to see your words in print and mm-hmm. you want to perfect your writing, it's really mm-hmm. a good vehicle for that. But for marketing, I honestly think it takes a lot of time away from what you should be doing, which is your number one priority, creating more stories. And if you are a fiction author, I don't think it's the best way to build a market. If that's your goal, there are other social network platforms already established that can give you a better return on your time for that.
And why do you say that for fiction writers?
Because if I work really hard to bring a lot of people to my blog, and they all buy my book. So let's say that's 3,000 people. I make 3,000 sales. Now what? Those 3,000 people are continuing to come back to my blog. We're communing. We're enjoying each other's company. My blog has grown to the point where now it's a campfire. And right. we're all sitting around it talking. But right. those people have already bought my book. I need new customers.
I see.
If I want to reach out to new customers, that is not the easiest way to do it. It's gratifying for a number of other reasons. But as far as developing a platform for future sales, I really think there are other things that would provide a better payoff, to be
very
frank.
Very interesting. Well, thanks for that insight. Mm-hmm. One last question, Lynn. What story are you working on right now, and when will that become available?
Oh, this is so exciting. It's a collection of short stories. It's called Boomer Love, Short Stories of Midlife and Beyond.
Hmm.
And the reason that I'm writing it is because I have so many stories in my head of characters who I want to show that they are, you know, dealing with this midlife deal and how they overcome the challenges and move on in a powerful way. And then they experience joy, or not to be a spoiler, but in some of my stories, I actually have them see the light and then run back to their safe place that right. isn't so good for them.
Not experience the joy.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm going to be doing. It should be available in probably spring. But after I do that, then I'm going to do a sequel to Dakota Blues.
Okay. Well, looking forward to it.
Thanks.
Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Lynn Morgan Spreen, please visit her website at www.inanyshinything.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Brian Boykel, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.